the ideas, the leaders, the lives that are shaping Denmark and the world. From Blocks Hub in Copenhagen, Denmark, this is Global Denmark.
Wedged into a small roundabout, between the old Aarhus rail yard and the rear entrance of the Bruins Gallery shopping mall, stands a new but incognito office building with two front doors. Behind one, a job center, the Danish government's euphemistic name for an unemployment office. And behind the other, the world headquarters of Danske Commodities. Now, ask most people to name the 10 biggest Danish companies by revenue, and you're sure to get names like Maersk, Novo Nordisk, Lego, Carlsberg, and Grundfos, many of which have campuses, entire city blocks, piers, or even towns named after them. But not here. Just that single glass door, a modest reception, and two chairs. Inside, I'm greeted by Jens, who's wearing sneakers and looks a little bit like a tech guy. We take the stairs up to the fifth floor to meet with this episode's guest and CEO of Danske Commodities, Helle Østergaard Christensen. This is a no-bullshit kind of introduction, and it has the feel of a place where there's a lot of work getting done. And there is. Danske Commodities is just 15 years old. During that time, it has grown from one employee and a rented desk to 360 employees and almost 12 billion euro in revenue. And while top line says little about bottom line, Danske Commodities is in fact one of Denmark's largest revenue producers, and it's making money too. Now, Helle, like the company she leads, may not be a household name just yet, but both are garnering plenty of attention. She's been named one of the 50 most influential businesswomen in the world by Forbes magazine, amongst other accolades, and she's the first, and maybe still only, female CEO in major energy trading. I visited Helle at her, surprise, modestly appropriated office to talk about what has made Danske Commodities so successful so quickly, and why energy trading matters so much right now. But I had to start by simply asking what energy trading is all about in the first place.
What we basically do is that we move energy across borders. We trade power, gas, and certificates. And putting it very shortly, we take energy where there's more than needed to where it's needed most. Energy trading today is very much about balancing the market. We have so much renewables installed in Europe now. So you can imagine when the wind blows in Denmark and there is a lot of sun, and at the same time maybe it's a Sunday where there's not a lot of consumption. And then at the same time, maybe in Turkey, there's a heat wave and all the air conditions are moving on. So we would probably in that situation have a surplus of energy in Denmark, and they would have a need in Turkey. And if we want to succeed with the green transition, having more renewables in the market, we need to effectively move it around in the market to make the most use of it.
Okay, so far so good. But what about the nuts and bolts? How does one trade energy?
If I should simplify it a little bit, if you bought an orange in Spain and had to sell it in Norway, you would have to rent a truck to transport it. If you don't transport it, you lost the rent of the truck. If you buy the orange in Spain and you have to transport it to Norway, the price of the orange has to be the price of what you pay in Spain plus the transportation cost, plus hopefully a small margin. When we these capacities through Europe, which is a complicated network of capacities, we participate in auctions to get right to those capacities. That is daily auctions, monthly auctions, yearly auctions. And then we have access to these capacities. And we see that as options. And what we can lose is the price of the option. And then we use these options to trade on 39 different exchanges and with a lot of counterparties, where we have methodologists employed in the company. We have a lot of quants, analysts, and we look at consumption patterns and production patterns. And then we take energy from where there's more than needed to where it's needed most, to put it basically. And then what the price we can pay is the price plus the transportation cost. And I think what differs then from oranges to all kinds of other goods is that you can't store electricity. So when you buy and sell it, you have to have access to these rights and nominate it just up to delivery. Because if you don't, you lose it. You can't store electricity.
Things have happened pretty fast. I ask Hello, what contributes to the speed of Dansk Commodities' success?
I think the energy market in Denmark was one of the first energy markets to be liberalized. And we were born from this market. We were a first mover on this market. Today, the energy market in the Nordics is the most competitive and liquid market in Europe and probably the world. And that means that we are born on the most competitive market. And that means that we could bring our business model to new markets as they opened up and liberalized. And we have done that every time a new market has opened in Europe, we have been there as a first mover. So I think being born on this market, having developed the competitive edge here and having access to talent is a contributor to our success.
How did all of this start in Aarhus, of all places? What's the story there?
It actually started because of one man, Henrik Lind, our founder. Henrik have a background in the financial sector and was working in an energy company, not an energy trading company, but an energy company, and saw that the flow between Denmark and Germany was liberalized. And he could see that there was a good idea. He could see some opportunities. And he basically started up the company with a rented desk, one employee, and grew it very fast from there. As you also said, we're only 15 years old. And from that start, it was the first company in Denmark and maybe in Europe who traded in that way. We have seen a whole sector growing around that.
The wind industry, particularly the production of windmills, has been synonymous with this area of Denmark for years. Did that play a role? Or is your role as a trader completely independent of the production of renewable energy?
Yes. Today, the energy market is very much influenced by the green agenda. Having more renewables installed, that is solar, wind, etc. That also gives more volatility. And simply to handle this, you need to have trading around it. At the same time, if you want to install wind turbines and solar plants today, the competition is so hard and the margins are getting smaller and smaller. So in order to make it profitable, you need to tap into the whole value chain. And you also need to tap into the trading part where you actually flow your power to the best prices and you trade around the assets. So it is an essential part of the future energy transition to have that part of the value chain also. So that means that most of the big energy companies today in Europe and in the world have trading units, and a lot of independent trading units have started up.
A lot happened in 2019. You became CEO and Dansk Commodities was purchased by Equinor, which is the former Norwegian Statoil, the state oil company, for the whopping sum of 400 million euro. Why did they buy you?
Equinor is an old company, old oil company, that is transforming into a more green company, more focusing on renewables. And for them, it was definitely a strategic purchase because, as I a little bit alluded to before, having access to the whole value chain is a success criteria to be successful in the green transition. Equinor bought DC and also decided that the future development of power trading for the whole company of Equinor, which is 22,000 people, were going to be in Aarhus in the future. And I think that is quite a testament to us, but also to the city and promising for the future. Because with Equinor in our corner, we have access to capital, and we also have an opener that invests heavily in the green transition.
By investing in the green transition, Hella means that Equinor owns windmill farms, and Dense Commodities helps them get the energy from those windmill farms to places where it can be sold. Where is Dense Commodities in 5 years?
Now we operate with algos and machine learning on the short curve. That is really for the positions day ahead and within day. But we are moving that longer on the curve. We are also a company with global activities. We have, until a couple of years ago, been represented all over Europe. All countries in Europe, we have been active. A couple of years ago, we started up in the US. We are starting up in Brazil now, and also looking into an office in Singapore. We are already trading in Australia. So I would not say we are a global company, because I think that's too big a word. But I think we are a European trading company with global activities. In 5 years, we are a much more tech-driven company. We today, having algos, machine learning, is a natural part of our business. It's embedded in our business model. But we have developed that even further. That is a development that goes very, very fast.
What keeps you up at night in terms of this business?
As a trading company, we do take positions in the market. It's based on analysis and models, but we do take market risk. And as you said it in the beginning, we are a company with a huge revenue, but also with a very, very small margin. So we need to have control of our risks, because a few wrong trades can hurt the company's earnings quite a lot. So market risk is something I pay a lot of attention to, but it's born with that, and it's one of our core competences and embedded in our business model. And then there is the operational risk, because operating on the energy market also means that we have an obligation to deliver the energy promising. If not, there can become imbalances in the market. And we are actually that big that we can create quite some imbalances in the market. We have wind turbines that deliver power 24/7, 365. So even not having access to the market for 5 minutes can be a challenge for us and can incur quite some losses and imbalances in the market. So you can imagine how you feel at home or in most companies if you don't have internet access or access to your system in 5-10 minutes, you probably would go for a cup of coffee. But here it is a big concern for us. So the operational side is one of the biggest risk for us, at the same time with having quite some complicated systems and setup and access to a lot of data. So in that sense, we have business continuity plans. We have a diesel engine in the basement if there's a power outage in Aarhus. We have several setups on internet access. We have dual setup on servers. It is quite fascinating to see the whole setup around this.
Studying for an executive MBA at Henley Business School in Denmark is an intense and rewarding experience. If you want to achieve the best possible outcomes in business and in life, Henley can give you the skills and knowledge you need through the Henley MBA. For more information, visit henley.dk.
You've said that you want to enable the green transition. What are your thoughts about trading only in green energy? Is that even realistic?
We all want more renewables. We want more wind turbines. We want more solar. We want to be more green. We have high ambitions. If you look at the different European governance on what we want to green, what we want to achieve. But at the same time, we don't want to look at it. So it becomes more and more offshore. And the parks are getting bigger and bigger to make it profitable. At the same time, we want to phase out coal. We want to phase out oil. What we have to remember here is that renewable energy is really not a stable production. So we don't necessarily have the production when we have the need. To reach these ambitions we have with phasing out conventionals as stable production and betting so much on renewables, we are also making a future technology bet. Because right now we don't have efficient batteries, at least not with scale. So you can imagine if we are phasing out the conventionals, the stable productions, we will have periods of time where there is a surplus of energy. And here you need traders to move it across borders. So I don't think we will be completely off with the conventional energy. I think it will be more and more gas that will be used because that's better than coal, even though it's not completely green. But in periods where there is a surplus of production of offshore wind and solar, we need to be able to close down the coal mine, close down the gas turbines all over Europe and use the energy, the green energy, as good as possible. And that's where traders come in.
Does Danske Commodities have a mission or a formal purpose position about green energy?
We have a mission of making future green investments profitable. Because if we want pension funds, we want different shareholders to invest in green energy, it is a prerequisite that it's profitable. And we can make them profitable through trading.
Let's talk about your background. You're riding a rocket here. You're the first woman CEO in energy trading globally. How did you get to where you are today?
I joined DC, or Danske Commodities, when I was 32, and before that I had some years in the financial sector. When I joined DC, DC was really on the leap of growth. I think I was employee number 32. I started up the risk management function focusing on market risk and credit risk. It was a period of time where we were not really trading on the curve and we were only trading on exchanges and with big counterparties, so there was not that big market risk or credit risk, but that was really changing. So I started setting that up. 1 year after, I could see that we started to have more currency risks. Before, we mainly traded in euros, but with a small margin, currency risk is something to be aware of. So I started up the treasury department. We started to focus on liquidity management, having more banks onboarded. So that was really the second thing I started up. And then thirdly, I started up the legal department. And I used to say that my legal competences lies within being married to a lawyer, and that was about it. But somehow I became the connection between our external law firms and our traders, and that was not a good position to be in a co-some company because I was really becoming a bottleneck. And I hired the first lawyer and set up that department, and of course that's a big department today. And then in 2014, I took over the CFO position, including finance and IT, and then the CEO position in 2019. I think I'm where I am today, first of all, because I've managed to grow within the different positions. In a growth company, I managed to see what competences do we actually need for the future and organize myself around it and always employ people that's a little bit smarter than me. And at the same time, I've, as a leader, been thinking as a shareholder, you know, being very much aware of that I needed to create value on the short term, but also on the long term. And you can say I've not been afraid of taking on responsibilities also within areas where I've maybe not been 100% prepared.
How does it feel to be called one of the 50 most influential businesswomen in the world by Forbes magazine?
It was actually quite strange that when that happened, and very surprisingly, because it's not something you hear about before it happens. And I think I'm very much aware of that I'm not among the 30 most influential women within business in the world. But if I should guess a little bit about why I'm on that list, I think it's because within the energy sector, it is the sector of all sectors in the world with the lowest representation of women. There's only 1% female leaders within the energy sector, and there's maybe only one female leader within energy trading.
Why?
That's a good question, because it is a sector that is becoming more and more competitive, and it's also a sector that starts to compete with other sectors, with the digitalization and renewables. And I think it's a challenge for the sector that we don't tap into 100% of the potential, and only tap into 50% of the potential of the workforce. And I think it can be challenging for the sector's competitive edge in the future if we don't manage to change that.
Are there candidates out there who are just getting overlooked? Is it simply a matter of that?
I think there are candidates out there. If you look at the School of Business, master degrees within finance, macroeconomics, there is a lot of females on that in those studies. I think the sector comes from previously being state-owned companies. If you look at DONG or Ørsted in Denmark, RWE in Germany. So it really comes from being old, stale old production companies with a lot of engineers. And I don't know why there's not more women, but I'm guessing maybe it comes from that background and that tradition. And I think maybe that's why I ended up on this list, because I managed to break some kind of glass ceiling here.
So how did you break that glass ceiling? Was it luck, being at the right place at the right time, or what?
Yeah, it's not purely luck. You don't become CEO in a company like that from purely luck. I think it comes with having been surrounded by people, leaders, a board of directors that focused on results and potential more than gender. And I think I delivered the results, and I think I managed to mobilize the respect I deserve around that.
How would you describe your leadership style?
I think I expect strong leaders in Danske Commodities. It is as simple as that. I expect leaders to set the direction. I expect them to be cultural ambassadors, carry that in the DNA. I expect them to inspire people, and they can expect the same for me, because there's a close link between retention, motivation of employees, and how you can motivate and set the direction and inspire people. So I think I'm a leader that very much based it on, once I trust, but at the other side, also the expectations and responsibility that follows that.
What challenges you?
It was remarkable for me to go from the CFO to the CEO position. The CEO position is much more external oriented. There is expectation, me being the face outside the company and inside the company and being visible in so many different senses, where the CFO job was maybe much more specialized in different areas. It is also a job where you may be a little bit more lonely than when you are a leader and you have a team around you and a group around you. I, of course, have senior leadership, which I have great benefit from and I trust a lot. But in some way, there is always areas where we can improve, and always areas where we have some challenges. And as CEO, it all hits you.
Are you an introvert? And how do you deal with that and being a CEO?
If you did a personality profile on me, I would come out as introvert. But I'm also what people would call a trained extrovert, because I acknowledge the necessity of it. But that also means that outside work, I also need to, you know, sometimes, you know, gather energy by isolating myself a little bit. Outside work, I'm very much. Do you know the character Hannah Montana?
Yeah, of course.
A Disney character. If you have children, you
also
probably
known as Miley Cyrus.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, sometimes I feel like there's a CEO Hiller and a private Hiller, and there's quite a difference between those two. I have three children, you know, that in essence keep me going. So there's definitely not time for a marathon. They of course keep me occupied, which is very, very nice because it gives you another perspective. My best friends are still the friends from high school. That means that, and I actually prioritize my friends a lot, but that also means that they do a completely different things that I'm doing, which is very, very nice because it gives you different perspective on things. But of course, on the other side, it's also sometimes hard to explain the challenges you actually have. Sometimes it's hard to explain the challenges of being a CEO if you haven't really tried it. We have a summer house out in the nature where I really enjoy going.
You have to make a lot of sacrifices to do what you do. Is it worth all the sacrifices that you have to make as a mom, as a friend, as a wife?
Yes, and I do it proudly. I'm really not embarrassed by it. Sometimes I have to choose the easy solution at home. I look very much of what I do for the sake of my children and what I do for the sake of others. And what I do for the sake of others, I easily cut off. So I have no ambitions of being 100% ecological, doing homemade meals, have a perfect garden, things like that. And that's I think that's easy for me. But of course there are sacrifices, but I think it's worth it. But also I don't think we should overestimate them. I think it's also a story we tell, and if we keep telling that story, I think we won't have more female CEOs. We should all remember that I have another flexibility than a nurse have or someone sitting in Netto. I'm grown up with a father working on a factory his whole life, which you can definitely see on him now, and a mother being a nurse with three shifts around the hour. And no one ever asked her about her work-life balance. And I don't think a lot of people ask someone in Netto about it. So I also think it becomes very much a discussion for the privileged. I think there's a great benefit of having this position because it gives you flexibility. And I actually have the choice of doing something different or, you know, organizing my day. And I think you shouldn't underestimate those benefits. So I think you can definitely be a CEO and you can be a mother, and it doesn't contradict each other.
How often do you consider your role as a female leader? What is that role?
I don't consider it a lot. In my career, I haven't really experienced it being a challenge. What I'm very much aware of is, and it's just something I'm aware of, is the unconscious bias. When I was the CFO and Henrik was the CEO, I was in charge of the sales process in whole DC. But when I had meetings with him, people would often think I was his EA. Now I have a CFO, male, 50 plus, and when I go to meetings with him, people often think I'm his EA. So, and people don't do it out from bad intentions or anything, or lack of respect, not at all. It's just the unconscious bias, and I just noticed that one. So if you are aware of it, it's not a problem.
Great. What do you wish you were better at?
A lot of things. I don't know where I should start. I think to be in the energy market, 60% of our earnings last year was from things we didn't do 5 years ago. So that means that probably 60% of what we earn today is not there in 5 years. So that means that we need to renew ourselves at all times. That means I need to have a perspective in a fast-moving market, and I think I need to be better on that and challenge myself on that all the time. I think the digitalization journey, I think that sets requirements to all leaders, also me. And then leadership. I also need to be better at leadership. I think that's something, I think it's something you can be, always be better at, but I also think for the young generation there's also new requirements to leadership.
Are you getting the most out of your time in Denmark? Pick up the printed copy of the English language newspaper Copenhagen Post today to access relevant news and event information guaranteed to enhance your working and family life.
Helle, what can the world learn from Denmark?
I believe that the world can learn from the rise of renewable energy in Denmark. When it comes to the integration of renewables sources in the energy mix, and when it comes to the production of energy sources, wind power produces more than half of Denmark's total electricity consumption today. At the same time, we managed to turn in green energy into a viable industry with companies like Vestas, creating jobs both in Denmark and abroad. The energy trading business has grown strong in Aarhus as another example of how an industry that helps promote renewable energy has good living conditions in Denmark. Partly because the knowledge about the industry is already here, but also because we are able to attract the needed specialists in the region. So you could say that we have the entire value chain for renewables energy in Denmark, with Vestas producing the wind turbines, Ørsted building the wind farms and supplying green energy, and the companies like Denmark that turn renewable assets into a viable business, bringing green energy to the market. And you could also think that the world can learn from the flexible Danish job market, where we have an economical safety net that provides, that is provided by the state. It makes it easier for people to switch jobs. It makes it easier for companies to employ people, because we know that we are not afraid of growing. Because if we should come in the unfortunate situation that we don't need people anymore, we know there's a safety net in Denmark to catch those people.
What about the other way around? What can Denmark learn from the world?
Yeah, I've been thinking about that because I actually got this question in advance. And I think there are things we can learn. I heard an expression that Americans are like peaches. They are very soft on the outside and hard on the inside. And I think Danes, on the other hand, are like coconut, you know, very hard on the outside and soft in the middle. It takes a lot of effort to break through the hard shells of Danes. But when you do, you find that that's actually quite nice. But I think we could learn to soften that hard shell a bit, and because it can be difficult for foreigners to really get under the skin of a Dane. And for a company like Danske Commodities, onboarding a lot of international employees, it can be difficult for them to be onboarded in our society. And I also think that when we look at our politics in general concerning refugees and foreigners, I don't think it's always my proudest moment traveling around in the world, our perspective on that and how we see refugees and foreigners in the country.
If you had two book recommendations that have made an impression on you personally or professionally, what would they be?
I have two, and they're quite different. And I think the latter one is more a perspective. But and it's not management books. I can say that immediately. There's so much management material out there that you can easily get a little bit lost on it. But a book I really enjoyed, and I don't know if you know it, it's A Man Called Ove.
Yes.
Have you read it?
About the grumpy old Swedish guy.
Yeah, a grumpy old Swedish guy that lost his wife and now wakes up every morning with the plan of making a suicide. Because it's not worth living for him anymore without his wife and without his job. But somehow he gets interrupted every day because this grumpy old man meets a cat that needs some help and his neighbor needs some help. And, you know, so he gets interrupted over and over again. And I think it is such a good book. It tells us something a little about to receive happiness and kindness is very, very good in your life. But if you give those things, it actually gives a purpose in your life. And it also tells, it's a book that focuses on the inherent goodness in people. And I think we all need that in these times. And it's so symbolic that he actually dies a natural death because of too big a heart. Yeah. So that would be the one. And the follow-up, Britt Marie was here, is actually also really, really good. But it also tells a little bit about, you know, those strange profiles or those who falls a little bit out the norms, that there's a story behind, there's goodness behind, there's value behind, and they actually, in this book, Ove actually makes a huge difference in his nearby society. It will never come in the history books, but he actually brings goodness to people. And I think number two is a little bit more also a traditional one, and that's not a book, but that's one of my inspiration is actually, and it's because it's easy to remember and you can put a picture on it in your head, you can have an imagination. I think that's a little bit how I communicate in my head, it's through pictures, but that's Pippi Longstocking, because she had a lot of courage. She dared to do new things and also believed very much in herself. One thing she said, I've never tried that before. I'm sure I'm good at it. And I think you need to have courage in leadership positions. You can't postpone decisions until you know everything. You know, proactivity, analysis can carry you a long way. But it's very rare you have 100% certainty. So then you have to rely on your gut feeling, but also your values.
You mentioned to me earlier that you also liked her quote, "The tongue withers if you don't use it."
And I think that's actually very important to remember. You have an obligation to speak up, but you also have the obligation as a leader to create a room for dialogue, for openness, for challenges, because you should always remember what is not said in a meeting room or in a dialogue is probably talked about at the coffee machine. So I think, and to create this openness, you need as a leader also to show your personality. You know, you need to show your strong and your weak sides to create this open room for dialogue. And the third thing she said, which I think is spot on for leadership, is that if you are very strong, you must also be very kind. With the great responsibility, but also the opportunity to take decisions, also comes a responsibility that demands for strength and compassion at the same time. So you must not be afraid as a leader of taking decisions and setting the direction, but you should always be aware of how you are perceived and how you actually, how you act on these decisions.
That was our talk with Helle Østergaard Christensen, Chief Executive of Dansk Commodities, one of the 30 most influential businesswomen in the world, and a huge fan of Pippi Longstocking. For my co-host Thomas Mulhern and production assistants Anna Larsina and Yuping Duan, I am Brian Woodward, and this is the Global Denmark Podcast. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and a whole bunch of others. We'll be back soon with a new episode about the people, ideas, and innovations that are shaping Denmark and the world. Stay tuned.